Hi, I'm Nick Keim, author of the Salamander novels, and you're listening to Sean Hammer. Booyah!
Lo, there do I see my father. Lo, there do I see my mother and my sisters and my brothers. Lo, there do I see the line of
my people back to the beginning.
Lo, they do call to me. They bid me take my place among them.
In the halls of Valhalla,
where the brave
may live
forever.
Well, hello everybody, welcome to episode number 55 of Sean Hammer. Well, hope you like the beginning. That's any indication what today's show will be about is something Viking and Nick Keim. So let's get to it. Today's show will be about the Lone Wolf, basically the unit on parade, basically for Sean Hammer, or unit of the month, or whatever the hell you want to call it. We'll go ahead and name it like that. And I have two Black Library authors on today's episode. Both these were taken at Games Day. I have C.L. Werner and Nick Keim. And before we go in, what the hell I've been doing for the last couple weeks, I'd like to thank Jason Justice for letting me borrow his recording device, his Zoom or whatever it is. If I didn't have this, these interviews at Games Day would not be possible. So thank you, Jason. Okay, so what have I been doing? Well, I went to Games Day. I've been painting the Le Crocs manifold group for my friend Andrew Becker, or Becker, or however you want to call him. He's come along. I'm supposed to play him in some manifold this week, but we never got together quite yet. I not been doing anything painting on myself. I've been putting together the show and a couple of prize goodies to give away. Let's see what else I've been doing. I have gotten an almost 3x3, 3 foot by 3 foot card table for my niece, and I'm going to be converting that into a manifold table, and I'll have some pictures of that as it goes along. I'm going to go ahead and base it with some sand or basing rubble, whatever the hell you want to call it. I got a few pieces of cobblestone on. Plastic card I'm going to put underneath, paint those up nice, and cover the whole thing with flock and see what the flock we have. Basically want the table to be flat so I can have different terrain and stuff and not have it impeding, I don't know, just basically saying this is what you can play all the time. You got this hill glued down here and you have this over here. Although there's some very nice tables out there. I saw one this week, matter of fact, a swamp table. Freaking fantastic. I might have to actually try it, but I'm not going to be able to do as good a job as this guy or girl had done. Let's see, what else have I been doing? I've been going crazy with the Hero Clicks again. They released a Street Fighter set. Pretty cool set. Big Street Fighter fan. Big Hero Clicks fan. And there we go. Together, it's 100% good. I'm also working on a second podcast. Probably going to be once a month or twice a month. I don't know. For you of those who check out my site, you can you see one of the pages I started out. It's called Dial Talk Radio, and this is going to be a Hero Clicks exclusive podcast. So maybe I can stop talking about it here on Sean Hammer, and you guys can get along just with the Warhammer, 40K, everything Games Workshop, and Malifaux, I guess. So let's see. As for what I've been doing, that's about it. And this happens to be my second recording because my dumbass had on pause. Yeah, good thing this didn't happen in Games Day. And speaking of, I went to Games Day. Had an interview with C.L. Werner, Nick Keim, Gav Thorpe, and Mike Lee. So today's episode will be half of the interview. So that will be C.L. Werner and Nick Keim, as I said. I also have two prize giveaways today on Sean Hammer. I don't know exactly how I'm going to do it, so I'm going to just make it up. I have a prize pack for my Games Day prize packs I put together. Each one will consist of a Space Marine backpack-type satchel from THQ. It's Ultramarines Blue with white writing. each package has a piece of work from one of the Black Library authors, signed, autographed, as well as this year's limited edition Skaven Games Day 2011 piece. Maybe some extra goodies and stuff that depends on how I feel when I'm putting these together. So today I'm giving away the one from Nick Keim and the one from C.L. Werner. You want to get those? Go ahead and leave me an iTunes review. I want freaking iTunes reviews, people. Go ahead and give me an iTunes review. Email me. Let me know you got it. Check. That's one for you. Go ahead. Friend me on my podcast site. That's another one. Check. I put your name, another one of your names in a bowl. Go ahead and send me an email. Let me know what you want to hear on Sean Hammer. And you can send me as many of those. Well, make them exclusive. Send me one Malifaux, one 40K, one Fantasy. If you have them, they'll give you three more chances to try and win one of these Black Library exclusives. Foremost, the last one. I don't know. You can give me an email and tell me why exactly you deserve this and why you want it. And I'll give you one of these prize packs. Also up, I have given away. I have one to two more packets left from Phoenix Fabrications. This is a company that does Gothica miniatures as well as Real Earth bases. I think that's what I kind of could have botched that up. Solid Earth bases, sorry. And they make great bases for Malifaux. And one of the prizes is one of the figures, a couple of random bases that they do. And one lucky winner from that, all you got to do is tagline Malifaux and subject for me on email and give me some suggestions. And you could win this prize. And the best one as suggestion as well will get the finished fabrication pack, as well as the Purple Wars deck from Weird Miniatures. Unopened, it'd be all yours. So I got some great giveaways. I have five pretty good giveaways in the next couple weeks. The rest of the two Black Library giveaways will be on next episode of Sean Hammer, which we will be going over probably the Sisters Battle Codex review and the two parts of the White Dwarf, and possibly the rest of the White Dwarf. I think they need their own little they need their own codex review. I feel sorry for the sisters being a White Dwarf codex. And hopefully one day they will have a codex as badass as the Blood Angels. So stay tuned, boys and girls. And we'll see you on that part. Let's see. Other than that, if you've been listening, I've had the guys from Ethervox on the show. I've had Bill from the Gamers Lounge and a two-part interview. You can, if you haven't checked out already, check out Bill at the Gamers Lounge and get the second part of the interview. Check me out. See what I got to say. Tell me if I'm doing anything wrong, or tell me if you think that I'm pretty cool to listen to on other people's podcasts as well. Let's see. I got Graham McNeil coming up. He will not evade me again. Of course, we'll be talking about his new Black Library release, and we'll call that episode when it comes up An Evening with Graham McNeil. Be nothing but Graham. So if you got some questions, comments that you want to send to Graham McNeil, send them to me. I'll read them all on there. Make sure I got your name on your email. Question, comment. You could basically give praise or whatever. And send them to Sean at seanhammer9.yahoo.com. And that's Sean, S-E-A-N, Hammer, H-A-M-M-E-R, the number 9 at yahoo.com. Now, let's see. Other things I've been doing. Like I said, I went to Games Day, got some picks coming up. I went to Amon Amarth concert last week, and that's pretty much why you guys are going to suffer through this Lone Wolf preview, Lone Wolf breakdown, because the band, as I've said before, pretty much kicks ass, and they make me think Space Wolves. So I did some research of different builds and stuff that you can do with the Lone Wolf, and we'll be going over those in a few minutes. Let's see, did I get them all? Becker, I still want to know why I can't listen to Bill anymore, can't talk to Bill, and well, we're going to take a break. I'll hear from our couple of sponsors and different podcasters out there, the guys from Worlds and Radios, give a shout out. I'd like to also give a shout out to the guys from Life After the Cover Save. I'm feeling down, I want something funny to listen to that's partially Warhammer 40K related. I will listen to the guys at Life After Cover Save. You know, and it's a good listen. They do a great job and pretty funny. Really like listening to them. So let's go ahead and take a break, and we'll be back, and we'll go over some Lone Wolf action. Then we'll have the interviews, and I'll probably pretty much call it. And after that, there won't be a closing for the show. So, yeah. Talk to you guys in a few.
Cool City Games, Blue Water's most complete source for miniature wargaming and sports cards. Cool City Games offers a safe and friendly environment with free open gaming and up-to-date new releases, restocks, and hassle-free special orders. You can even put stuff in layaway. Cool City Games even offers box and case pricing on cards and collectible miniatures. Located in downtown Port Huron, that is in Michigan for all you out-of-towners, Jeff and Mike are available and ready to serve all your hobby needs. Stop by at 724 Huron Avenue or visit on the web at www.coolcitygames.com.
Hey, I'm Luke.
And I'm JJ.
And we're the guys from World's End Radio. When we're not playing games
or lying to our wives about it,
then we're going to the ends of the earth to bring you the latest content on all aspects of the Games Workshop hobby.
And a few other worlds besides.
So come find us at www.worldsendradio.com.
Or subscribe to the show through iTunes.
Of guest host at the imperialtruth.blogspot.com.
Alrighty, and we are back, and right now we're going to have a little discussion about the Lone Wolves. So, for the people who live in under a rock in the 40K universe, they're going to figure out what the hell is a Lone Wolf. Well, I'll tell you right now. A Lone Wolf is a space wolf who hasn't made it to the ranks of Wolfguard yet and has lost all of its pack members of its previous battle groups. And they've embarked on a dangerous quest to slay the most monstrous beast to redeem the honor of their pact in hand-to-hand combat. And these guys run around the battlefield in the 40K universe, of course, randomly hunting down large monsters. At least that's their intent. Now, for stats, Lone Wolf has a weapon skill 5, a ballistic skill 4, strength 4, toughness 4, 2 wounds, 4 initiative, 2 attacks, a leadership 8, and a save of 3+. He's coming around with special rules. He's got acute senses, fearless, and counterattack. He also has glorious death. Lone Wolf has the internal warrior and feel no pain special rules. Furthermore, missions that use kill points. A lone wolf does not concede a kill point if he dies in battle. Instead, to represent his failure to meet the specific spectacular end that he's created for himself, a lone wolf will concede a kill point if he survives to the end of the game. He is packed 1, so he cannot be joined by any other models, and he's got Beast Slayer. This gives him the ability to reroll failed to hit wounds against walkers, monstrous creatures, and models with toughness 5 or more. So that's just the gist of the Lone Wolf. Now we're going to take a look at different builds you can do. And roles that you can use the Lone Wolf for. First, he's an elite choice. So, you gotta give up some elite choices, but you know, hey, shoulda shit. And let's see, let me turn to the page here because I don't take notes. Okay. He's running in at 20 points by himself. He's got all of his special rules. He comes with power armor, close combat weapon, bolt pistol, frag and crack grenades. Now, there's two different ways you can. There's a few different ways you can arm the Lone Wolf. He's got the ability of power sword, plasma pistol, wolf claw, power fist, frost blade, frost axe, thunder hammer, storm shield. He can replace his armor with terminator armor. He can replace his armor storm bolter with combi flamer, combi melter, or plasma combi plasma, wolf claw, thunder hammer, storm shield, or chain fist. He can replace his Terminator Armor's power weapon with Wolf Claw, Power Fist, Frostblade, or Frost Axe, Thunderhammer, Storm Shield, or Chain Fist. And this is my favorite. May choose any of the following. We'll talk about the Mark of Wolf, and He can have up to two Fenris Wolves, but my favorites, Meltabiles, 5 points. And this goes into basically, the two ways I play the Lone Wolf. One is we got to look at the fact that he's not going to give up a kill point if he dies. So this is going to put your enemy in a very precarious situation where you can equip this guy to go out, kill a large monster, playing Tyranid or Chaos. Or you can equip this guy to really put hurting down on tanks. And this puts your enemy in a situation where they have to decide, is it worth it to give up a kill point and kill your Lone Wolf to save his own tanks or monsters? Or is it best just to let him go if the situation arises for you to lose that kill point? Now, if you're not playing kill points, the question's obvious. Most cases, kill the fucking Lone Wolf. He's going to wreck your shit. Now, we can look at his options. He's Power Sword. I'm going to say there's better options for this. The Plasma Pistol's too expensive for what he is. Wolf Claw, Power Fist, better options. Frostblade's not bad. Thunder Hammer, still could do better. Storm Shield. This is pretty cool. It's expensive, but it does increase his survivability, especially if you got him running around in Terminator armor. Feel no pain. Terminator armor plus two plus armor save and the storm shield 3+ on vulnerable on top of that. This guy's going to stick around. Plus, if you buy two wolves with him to locate wounds, he's got combi on weapon. I would go Combi Melta. I know the whole meta, there's that word, meta, is on Melta weapons, but you can't go wrong on this. I believe the Chain Fist is probably the best high strength that you can use for tank busting. And this is where if you're not playing those monstrous creatures and you want to just wreak havoc on your opponent's tanks and stuff, I mean, Melta Bombs and Chain Fist, why not? Two Fenris Wolves, so you take two, make sure he gets into close combat. And if you take the Mark of Wolfen, it's a little bit better than a power weapon. So, yeah, you're looking at a lot of different choices you can do. And the most important thing is to go with flavor and what you want your Lone Wolf to look like, how you want to perform, and what you feel in his head, his backstory, and his saga relies on. Let's see. You take this thunderous. You can take the Thunder Hammer against the monstrous creatures. It's better against monstrous creatures than it is the Chain Fist. But in the end, Lone Wolves they're a fun little add-on. There's a lot of little different things that you can pick with them. You can really flesh out the feel of an army. You got this random Space Marine, Space Wolf, running around, and you don't know what to do with him. Make him a Lone Wolf. I mean, worst case scenario, you put him out naked with the Mark of the Wolf and make him deal with him. You know, easy victory point for yourself if he dies in the kill point mission. These guys are pretty cool. I would recommend using them in a kill teams battle. I would also recommend it in patrol. Not so much. I don't know how they'll work if they're going to give up kill points every time if you use them in kill zones, which is another good if you're playing small. And we'll one day have an episode called Go Small But Not Go Home. So there's that. Let's see. they have a long list of equipment, but, Lone Wolf only gets two attacks. It means you have to use them in conjunction with other units who can soften up monstrous creatures first. But he is pretty much guaranteed to shred up a tank, he's got Melting Bombs and a Chain Fist. Why the hell not? Let's see. It's a good little feel-good unit, I think, for a Space Wolf player. And you've probably seen a couple of Space Wolf players out there roaming around with a random Space Wolf with two wolves on the thing. Primary targets for the Lone Wolves, like I said, will be dependent on your weapons load. If you want to maximize on the Beast Slayer roll against monstrous targets and creatures and walkers and such, or if you want to go for infantry killing, you can go even do that with the Lone Wolf. And don't forget, you can really pick out the tanks. But there are some drawbacks to Lone Wolf. He is unable to be joined or joined by any other units. So you really have to understand how you're going to move him, your target priority during the game, and exactly what are you going to do with him in the outcome of the battle. I mean, what do you want him to accomplish? He's going to need more forethought than any other model or unit in your Space Wolf army. He doesn't have a transport option. He can always grab another unit's transport, but, you know, meh. But if he's got Terminator armor, he can only do have a Land Raider. He'll usually start in regular deployment zones. And, you know, you're limited to basically moving him 6 plus a D6 for the run every turn. So, I mean, that's a big limitation, is trying to get him into combat. And if you got you got any other enemy, any other general who's worth their weight, they're going to know, because everything is pretty much people trying to get to what you see is what you get. So they're going to really focus on exactly what is that Terminator got, where did you deploy him, and basically they're going to outweigh, you know, cost and cost towards effect. I mean, you know, is it going to benefit them to kill it? Give up the kill point. I mean, there's easy ways where you can equip them just to do that in kill point missions. You just say, blah, here's my 20 point wolf lone wolf. Kill him, you know, or, you know, you could put the combi melt on him, or I'll pop a tank. Choice is yours. So, I don't know. It's they're a cool little unit. A lot of good sculpts. You can get out for them, a lot of conversion ideas. I do recommend at least one for every Space Wolf player. Now you can thank Nick Kime for this, because on back from Games Day I listened to his new Space Wolf audio drama. It's a pretty good book, and ultimately, here's spoiler alert, if you don't want to hear anything, I'll pause for a minute so you can skip past this. One of the main characters becomes a lone wolf, and it's a pretty brilliant little audio drama. I've been really enjoying the Black Library audio dramas, and it's a good listen to. So we will go ahead and end that here. I hope you guys enjoy your Black Library interviews. And remember, until next time. Okay, let me check the levels. And with me today, I have C.L. Werner. And we will address him as Clint. How are you doing today?
Doing fine.
Okay, well, C.L. Werner, he's done quite a few Black Library authors. He's the author of, novels. He's the author of Bruno, the Mercenary, or... Yep. Also, he does, I picked up the new Wolfric novel here today, and he's done a few Skaven novels. So, like I said earlier today, you from your pictures and stuff, you look pretty gruff. I was like, kind of like, you were the one I was apprehensive about talking to the most, because I thought, oh man, that guy looks pretty mean. But let me just tell you, pictures just don't serve this man justice. He's quite kind individual. So, I got a lot of people that like to, the Black Library crackheads, I would say, and they love reading everything. And the big question I get for the Black Library authors every time I come up is, how did you get started writing for the Black Library, and how did you get started writing, period?
Well, I've always been a writer, and going back as far as I can remember, I've always used to write little stories, you know, just for personal amusement. I start with Black Library came about when they were still publishing Inferno, which was a bi-monthly magazine that they published. I sent a prospectus, kind of a plot synopsis and a writing sample, to Christian Dunn, who was editor of Inferno at the time. And he liked what I sent him well enough that a few months later I wrote the first Matthias Thulman story for him. So that was really kind of my start with Black Library, was through Inferno. And after doing two stories for Inferno, they asked me to do a novel.
Oh, cool. Now, with the games and everything, do you actually play any of the Games Workshop games, or have dabbled with them in the past?
I used to play 40K and Warhammer Fantasy Battles. I just don't have the time for them anymore. I still, once in a while, will get time for a game of Mordheim. It's because it's a smaller skirmish scale game, it's easier to find the time and space to work with it.
Yeah, you could definitely, it makes sense, because in a lot of your writing you can tell that you're more of an individualistic writer, and a lot of your characters would fall inside the whole Mordheim scenery of the Warhammer Old World. So that's pretty cool. Do you write any 40K novels?
I haven't written any 40K novels yet. We've been discussing my doing a Space Marine Battles novel in the future. I do have a few 40K short stories that are out there. First was Iron Inferno in Fear of the Alien. And I've got one about the Emperor's Warbringers. And that one is Black Dawn. It's in the Victories of the Space Marines anthology.
Well, that's pretty cool. Now, I lost my next question. Okay. Well, like I mentioned earlier, and people that are listening to this recording don't know, but I haven't read a lot from you. But I have noticed you write quite a few Skaven novels. What's your connection with Skaven? And there's quite a few of them. And your writing style seems a bit not gritty isn't bad, but down the it's not the flavorful fluff that you would see in some of the 40K novels. Definitely not no High Elf book, you know, from Graham McNeil, who paint everything all beautiful with shiny. And I mean, that's the High Elves, I guess. But so what do you do? So tell us about some of your characters, perhaps maybe in your Skaven novels, and how you connect with those characters and why you keep going with this, because I believe you have 4 to 5 novels on them, the Greyseer and the
Skaven. Right now I have the 3 Thankwell novels. The third one actually is available for the first time today. I'm going to be doing a series based on the Black Plague in Warhammer's history for Time of Legends, so the Skaven are going to feature extremely prominently in that series. I think the biggest connection with them has been just kind of getting inside their heads. It's sort of a, I don't want to say easy, but it's an inhuman perspective that I think I've managed to capture well. Just the way that the Skaven perceive the world around them differently from the way a human being would. And, it's kind of a case of if something works, you just kind of continue with it. But the fluff behind them has always been so characterful and deep that they always attracted me to them.
Now, I know a lot of authors have tried writing about the Skaven. Usually they incorporate the Skaven as their plot device, and they don't get a lot of character to them. And that's one thing when I started reading, I think it was the first one, Tranquil series. There's a lot of character that you bring forth to the Skaven. Like you said, you personalize them as their own entity within the Black Library publications. Now, today I picked up, like I said, the Wolfric novel. I'm brain dead. I have no sleep. I swear to God. I drove, took 6 hours to get, 6-7 hours to get here from Port Huron, Michigan. And, I'm not using Google Maps anymore. Thank God my friend had a GPS on his phone. So in the Wolfric novel, what can the reader expect out of this character? I mean, he's pretty prominent in the new Chaos book for the Warhammer Fantasy Battles, but not much is known from, you know, that half a page of fluff that they give. I mean, what kind of character are we going to be looking at, and is this a new direction? I mean, are you looking at going to more chaos, and you know, with everything?
Well, I've written several books with the kind of a chaos perspective before. The first one I did was Palace of the Plague Lord, which focused on a Norse tribe. After that, I did Blood for the Blood God, which was dealing more with the Kurgan and people that are actually living in the Chaos Wastes specifically. I also did Forged by Chaos, which naturally enough featured Chaos characters pretty prominent. So Wolfric was kind of a natural graduation from those previous books. Probably the best way to describe him is almost like a Chaos version of Sinbad the Sailor. But definitely a lot more homicidal than Sinbad ever was.
So is he more villainous, or are we looking at like the anti-hero type character that you're going to fall in love with and hopefully be able to relate to?
Well, to the Norse, he's definitely a hero because he embodies everything that they value. You know, he's very strong, uncompromising, very forceful character, martial prowess. But as far as going from a more civilized standpoint, he's definitely villainous because, again, he's uncompromising, he's you know, vicious, very, very much a physical, combative sort of a character. The way the story unfolds, however, he's kind of enmeshed in a plot being hatched behind the scenes by a couple of traitors, so there's sort of an extra level of villainy that's worse than anything Wolfric's doing, so it kind of gives you more sympathy because there's somebody worse than Wolfric out there.
And sometimes that's amazing, especially when you got a good writer such as yourself. You can take a character and you can make him seem, you know, pretty badass and evil and say, this guy, you know, this guy's an absolute ass. Then there's somebody comes along and you feel bad for the villain. You're like, then the character goes along and does something to remind you that, you know, he's not a good dude either. So, besides, I mean, what do you have in the works right now for new publications and stuff that you're working on?
The next thing coming out is going to be The Red Duke. It's going to be released in October. It focuses on the Bretonian vampire.
Thank you. One of my favorite characters.
Actually, one of my favorites, too. When I first pitched the book, they really kind of wanted me to do something with Luther Harkon, and I sort of had to fight to get the Red Duke in there. And once I finally got the agreement there, we were able to run with the Red Duke. But just a fascinating character. He's sort of a creature out of time, which was sort of the inroad I had to his psyche. But a lot of good things I was able to do with that. Tapped in very heavily to the Circle of Blood campaign, which first introduced him.
It was back in 5th edition Warhammer?
5th edition Warhammer,
that's
correct.
I fell in love with him, yes.
So
the model,
I did.
Beautiful
model. I've got him on my desk at home.
Yeah.
So he's great. But yeah, I went very, very heavily back to that. Although I did twist it around a bit so that even people that are familiar with the Circle of Blood, some things have changed. So it's sort of like a history that you know, but you don't really know it.
Any mentions of Wallach within it on the Red Duke's history as well? Or
No mentions of Wallach, although you do kind of... He's there, but he's not there.
I am a fantasy fanboy. I play 40K, I play everything, but... It's really all about the vampires. That's all I got to say. Now, out of I've got a two-part question. Out of the things that you've written for the Black Library, what book is your personal favorite? And out of all the characters that you've written, who is your favorite?
Well, out of the books, my favorites would either be the first Witch Hunter book or Grey Seer. I think Witch Hunter is probably the one I wrote that... from a technical aspect and just kind of classic nature of the storyline is going to be the strongest of them. But I think with Grey Seer, I was able to do a lot of kind of tricks and trips with it. Plus, playing with Thankful was just a blast. I mean, my favorite character in the background, playing with him was like getting a Christmas present.
Now, I ask this of every Black Library author, so don't feel skittish. Even Dan Abnett kind of answered this. Graham McNeil, I'll get it from Aaron Dembski Bolden one day. Out of your fellow peers, out of all the writers you work with, who's your favorite author to read from?
That's actually kind of a tough one. Like a lot of the stuff Gav Thorpe's done, going back, of course, the Kim Newman books they wrote as Jack Yeovil. I don't think there's a better Warhammer book than Drakenfels, and I don't care if it's out of date or not. It's still kind of the tip of the iceberg. I really like Darius Hinks. I think he's going to be one of the heavyweights coming up. Mike Lee's stuff is pretty good. Graham McNeil has written some really nice ones, too. I wish Gordon Rennie still wrote for Black Library because I really enjoyed his stuff. Execution Hour and Zavant, I think, are just classic books.
And here's probably going to be the last one, except for how the fans can sit here and contact, maybe not contact you, but follow your blog or whatever. But if you had a chance to play with another Black Library character... in your novels and stuff, and you were given permission, you know, to expand on that character and add them fully within your novelizations, what character would that be?
Well, if Mike Lee hadn't beat me to it, I'd say Nagash, but
I kind of
with Nagash being off the table, I would have to say Azag the Slaughterer,
the
Orc Warlord with the Crown of Nagash.
So if you can make Mike Lee disappear, you take the Nagash? This is not a threat on Mike Lee's life at all, and I'm no way affiliated with CL Warner.
That would be kind of like closing the barn doors after the horses have eaten the children, so...
Yeah. Okay, I know a lot of the authors have their own blogs and stuff for fans to follow. Do you have anything that listeners can follow your works and get a hold of you if they do need to?
I have a website. It's vermintime.com. So that's vermin with time just sliced together.
You really going with this rat thing, are you? In no way I like to say that you look like a rat either. It just isn't like your pet looks like the owner thing. Well, I'd like to say thank you today for taking this time, and I look forward to this new novel. And actually, I have Forged by Chaos, I think it is. Got signed by you today, and I'm going to hand that out to one of the lucky listeners. I have probably put a trivia question about our interview. So keep your ears out for it, and I'd like to say thank you.
So thank you.
again, here I am at Games Day 2011, and I don't know if it's Chicago or not. It says Chicago, but I'm trying to find this place. I'm from Michigan. It was a long drive. And with me right now, I have a Black Library author and editor, apparently, Nick Keim. How are you doing?
I'm very well, thank you. Yes, it's been a lovely time in Chicago. I love the city anyway. It's my second visit. Obviously, a very quick trip for us from the UK. We were only here for like 3 days. So it's quite a, it's almost dreamlike because you don't really get a chance to adjust to the time difference. And by the time that you do, you're heading back on a plane, back to London, back to Nottingham again. But no, it's been great. Everyone's been really supportive. I had a lot of interesting questions, did an interesting Q&A session. It's been really good. I love Chicago, and I love coming here. So, yeah, it's been really nice.
This is my first time, and this was the first time I've technically time-traveled, switching time zones. So I thought that was pretty cool. So right now, as long as I stay in this time zone, I've gained an hour.
Oh, good stuff. And you have to pay that back eventually, though.
Yeah, tomorrow. I got to go back to work. So
I'll lose an entire day.
Oh, my Lord. Yes, you will. Well, 15 hours.
Yeah, six hours at least.
So tell us about yourself and what you do at Games Workshop in the Black Library.
Okay, well, I am an editor by day, which means I work with the majority of the Black Library authors in one capacity or another. That might be reading their synopses and pitches, their full novels, or helping to guide their development as an author for BL. And then by night, I wear a different hat.
Batman?
Oh, that'd be great, wouldn't it? No, not Batman, unfortunately, although I'm a huge Batman fan, incidentally. I'm a writer by night on the rooftops, and I think I'm probably best known for my Salamander books.
Oh, yes.
And I've just finished writing the third book in my first trilogy, which includes Salamander, Fire Drake, and Nocturne. I've done a bunch of other stuff as well, possibly most notably Fall of Damnos, which is my first Space Marine Battles Ultramarines book, which builds on the characters from my first 40k novella, which was Assault on Black Reach, which came out to coincide with the current edition of 40k.
Now, like I was mentioning to you, I haven't read a lot of your stuff. I have started in the Fall of Damnos. I probably butchered that. I've got, if you haven't started reading these, you don't have to read them in order. I thought that was really cool. And I'm really intrigued with the way these books are written. I like the colored maps in the middle.
Mm-hmm.
It gives you a lot more war feel to the books and everything, because you're not just going through the first couple pages and getting a map of the world, or, you know, like when you read a Lord of the Rings book and you have, you know, Middle Earth, and you go through.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it personalizes the books a little bit better. How was your experience writing basically a chapter in Space Marine history? Basically, just around the battle.
So what's the question again?
So, how did you like writing?
How did I enjoy it?
Yeah.
Well,
Because it's a little different. It doesn't. You know, you're focusing everything around a battle rather than solely around characters and incidents within their personal dramas and such.
Yeah, I think even though the books are ostensibly about battles, and I suppose the clue there is in the title of the series, Space Marine Battles, and that's, you know, it does what it says on the tin, that you still obviously need to have compelling characters, they still need to have depth. It's useful in some ways, because if you're writing about an existing and established battle, then a lot of what you need to know as far as the broad strokes of the story are concerned are already there. That in itself also presents some problems, because background for a battle doesn't necessarily always lend itself smoothly to a narrative, a piece of fiction. So occasionally you have to find ways to make it work as a novel. I've only written the one, but I personally really enjoyed writing Fall of Damnos, mainly because I got a chance to play with the Necrons. I'm a huge Necrons fan.
That's the reason why I started picking up that one. I heard somebody talking about, you know, they're looking for clues. I don't know if this, I'm not going to ask you, I'm not going to get into it. Yeah. Is there clues about the next Necron Codex? I don't care. But I did pick it up because I do enjoy a good Necron story.
Yeah, everything that's in there was kind of already in the background, really. Some of it is a bit more developed I wanted, I mean, the thing I'd like to focus on, the thing I'd like to talk about is that I wanted to develop the Necrons as characters. I didn't just want, particularly the Lord characters, and in the current Necron Codex, the current background, it's very clear about the fact that they all have different kind of foibles and idiosyncrasies. They have personalities, they have sentience, they have awareness. They're not robots in the sense that they don't have personalities or emotions, or at least not simulated emotions. It's difficult to say because they're aliens in many respects, and we don't know a whole hell of a lot about them. But one of the key drivers for me in making the Necrons the antagonists in that novel was that they be as interesting and as compelling as the Space Marine characters, and that they have desires and drives, albeit perhaps slightly strange and alien drives and desires that as we as human beings might find difficult to reconcile with, but that would make them compelling and interesting characters to write as well as to read about.
And you might think the Necrons as being, the sullen, emotionless, drab characters, but compared to the Ultramarines, they're like lively show tune dancers.
Yeah.
Sorry, Graham.
I think everyone has different readings of different characters, and I suppose the Ultramarines have this reputation as being the kind of, I've heard the phrase vanilla Marines.
All too much.
Yeah, I'm not sure I necessarily agree with that, and everyone's entitled to their opinion, of course. I think the Ultramarines are they're the poster boys. They're the ones that all the other Marines aspire to be like, because they're the ones that it was their Primarch that wrote, the Codex Astartes, and it's kind of, they are the template. They are arguably the most successful Space Marine chapter in the 40K universe. They're certainly the biggest, and they're empire builders too, which I think is kind of interesting. And I really like the Ultramarines. I think of them as, I associate them with gladiators and knights and characters of the ancient world, and I think there's kind of a bit of ancient Rome, a little bit of Greece kind of chucked in there, elements of that. Of course, it's part of the 40K universe, so it's unique in that sense, but there are definitely overtones of that nature. That's the route I kind of took with the Ultramarines, and I know Graham's done some of that with his great books as well that he's written about them too.
He's written quite a lot of those.
Yeah, he has, yeah.
Now, you've written the Salamander series. I haven't read any yet, and I know there's probably a lot of people that have, because I've heard other podcasts talk about, how much they love your Salamander characters and books.
Yeah.
Sell those books to me. Why should I read the Salamanders?
Sell them? Well, okay. Well, it's about a chapter that there's not been a lot written about them, so you'll certainly learn a lot of cool stuff about who the Salamanders are, what makes them tick. It's very much, it's very much a story. I mean, Vulcan is core to a lot of this story too. His influence, although it's 10,000 years later, is kind of still felt in this tale. So there are some kind of Horus Heresy overtones associated with those novels, and that, I think that's a draw. The story itself is very, it's incredibly detailed. It's a very deep story. It's got a cast of thousands that builds up over the course of the books, and it's essentially a tale of brotherhood. It's a tale of two Space Marines, Dakir and Sugan, who don't really see eye to eye, and yet they are Salamanders. I think the characters are perhaps a little bit more human, I guess. That's one of the comments I hear a lot with reference to the Salamander characters, in that they are a bit more human, so they kind of go through more a gamut of human emotions because they are more humanitarian, I suppose. They have those sort of concerns. It's an epic story. It starts out with a prophecy that they believe is linked to something that Vulcan was guiding them towards or warning them about, a prophecy which could end in the destruction of Nocturne and the wiping out of the chapter, which builds through the three books. That's the thread that runs through the three books. And at the core of that is Dakir, who is almost like Prophecy Boy, I suppose, or Prophecy Marine, in that he is either the saviour or the destructor of Nocturne. That kind of comes out in the first novel and is explored throughout. And there's an array of enemies that the Salamanders fight against. The first book is mainly about them fighting the Orcs, and the second book is the Dark Eldar, but at all times. They have a nemesis group of renegades called the Dragon Warriors, some of which are ex-salamanders too, right? And they're a kind of an antagonist thread that runs through the book, just in the background, really. They clash a little bit in the first book, you see them a little bit in the second book, and that gets paid off in a big way in the third novel. It's not three separate stories, it's one big story. It's an epic story and a massive story. I think if you like massive epic stories and you like reading about, you know, Space Marines, deep, compelling characters who go through a whole range of changes, I guess. None of the characters finish the story in the same way that they start, and that's because of what they go through and their experiences throughout, their relationships with all the characters, the relationship dynamics. If you like stories like that with depth, that have some, you know, some meaning and some great action too, I think, then you'll love The Salamanders. And I think that's why it's garnered a lot of fans, because I wanted to tell something which had depth, which was a big, epic, powerful story with a lot of cool characters in it.
Okay. Now, I know a lot of Space Marine books, the authors follow mythos, basically different cultures that they use towards. Now, I know you mentioned that the Ultramarines have a little bit of the Greek mythology. Mm. Everyone knows that the Space Wolves have, you know, high Nordic traditions and stuff. Is there a slick that the Salamanders follow?
No, not really. I think they're a tribal culture.
Okay.
So there are some... When I was looking at the naming conventions for my characters, I based some of it on some African tribal names.
Okay.
And I thought of those as the more traditional Nocturnian kind of names, but just like all the first founding chapters, some of those Space Marines originated from Terra. So they will, and for me, the Terran names were more of the classical, kind of the Grecian, the Latin, the Roman names, which is why you have characters like Chaplain Elysius and Techmarine Argos, because those are very much classical names. And on the flip side of that, you've got characters like, you know, Sugan and Dakia, who are, it's a bit more kind of tribal, but it has like a 40k kind of twist on it, a 40k flavor, a filter that it will go through. And I guess I had to kind of almost invent a culture. A lot of it is associated with fire and the earth, because they come from a volcanic world. They are earthy characters in the sense they're very grounded. They also understand geology and how that works. They have to in order to survive.
Yeah.
Certainly the Nocturnians, the human characters, have to do that. And obviously that transfers over to their protectors. The Salamanders, there's a lot of thematic stuff that deals with fire, which could obviously mean transmutation and change, because fire is a changeable thing. It forces change upon things, and how that works. Solidity. Transformation, rebirth as well. Phoenix from the flames, coming out of the ashes. Those themes are prevalent in Salamander and prevalent in the culture. The belief systems of Nocturne and the Salamanders are, my books at least, are predicated on a lot of that.
Okay.
A lot of those kind of cultural overtones. So a lot of the culture comes from that, really.
Definitely seems like you had a lot of play in the development of the homeworld and their links to mortality, I guess.
Yeah, and their attitude towards it. Yeah, absolutely. But I think all of that, although, yes, I got a chance to invent and develop a lot of the background, I don't think it was ever anything... I don't think I was stealing a step on anybody's toes. It's nothing that's really ever... I think the Salamanders are ever going to... necessarily, can't imagine getting their own codex, for instance, or something like that. I mean, they're part of the...
Some people wish they do.
Well, I'm sure, and I'm sure there's hundreds of people there with lots of different chapters that would love them to get their own codexes, and, you know, I can't influence that. I can't... I'm not an arbiter as far as that is concerned, so all I can do is try to... Yeah, stand my feet. I'm quite happy with the way things are. I mean, all I can do, really, is try to create something which I think is true to the background, makes sense as far as what else has been written about the Salamanders, and extrapolates from that and adds detail to it and adds depth to it, and hopefully into the bargain, you know, is a good story and is provides some inspiration for people that collect Salamanders and, you know, love that chapter.
Okay. Now, outside of your novels, I know, I believe you're the first audio drama that I've seen on disc. I think Raven's Flight. Is that it? That was the first one I actually picked up.
I didn't do that one. No, I've done a couple of audio dramas. That was Gav Thorpe who did Raven's Flight. The first one we did was The Lightning Tower and The Dark King.
That's what it is, Lightning Tower. Bad.
That's okay.
I listened to them at the same time at work.
Oh, right, okay. Easy to get them confused.
Yes.
I've done Fireborn, Vulcan's Shield, Thunder from Fenris.
Just picked that up, too.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to that one.
I'm writing a new one shortly. I can't really say much about it. It's I guess I can give you the title. It's called Perfection, and it's a chaos-based audio drama.
That's 40K or fantasy?
40K. Yeah.
Can I turn this off? Did you tell me?
No.
Damn it!
I can't. Sorry.
No. Usually, I ask all the Black Library authors who's their favorite Black Library author besides themselves. I'm not going to do that because you're in an awkward position.
Yeah, I kind of edit most of them, so I can't really have a favorite.
I'm not going to say that because they'll be like, oh, you know, you like this guy more. That's why you edit my books all the hell.
Yeah.
So you're exempt to this.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
You're not going to have this.
Okay.
What is your favorite book you've read?
The favorite book I've written? I got asked this question when I was in Belfast doing a book signing. This was when we went to Aaron's wedding as well, actually. And
pictures look lovely from that too.
I had a great time. It was phenomenal. Really good trip. It was really good. Iris is so friendly. It's lovely. But I would say, I think I love the Salamander novels because of A, what they've meant for my career, and B, it's such a massive story, and it's so, and now especially getting to the end of it, I can really reflect on kind of what I've achieved. Promethean Sun, because my first, you know, on my own piece of heresy fiction, and that really came together extremely well, and I've had some wonderful feedback from that. Damnos, because I just loved writing about the Necrons, and it was a chance to do some more with the characters that I'd established in Assault on Black Reach. But probably Grimblades, I think, would be my favourite, because it's just one that, it was just nicely self-contained. It was one of those stories that I always wanted to write. Alright, you know, it might not be as commercial as a Space Marine Battles book or a 40K novel, but in terms of everything came together like I wanted it to, and the story had lots of levels and it was quite complex and there was lots of different character stuff, and it all kind of, all the beats that I wanted to hit, I managed to hit. So from an authorial satisfaction level, I would say it was that one. Yeah,
definitely. I can see that, a lot of the satisfaction, you know, when you're doing the Space Marine Battles or Horus Heresy or Time of Legends, they're great and everything, but they're kind of like introductory for someone who's getting into what I feel is getting into the Black Library fiction.
Yeah.
And where you got the more individualistic books, allows you to break away from that. It's not even commercialism. I don't want to sound like I'm bashing anything, but I'm not. But, you know, you're breaking away from the story that's being built on so much. So, I can see where one of your favorite books is actually breaking away from the Horus Heresy or.
Yeah, I mean, don't get me wrong. I'm sure there'll be a book in the future, should I get to write a full Horus Heresy novel, that, you know, that would be the one, because I would, obviously you'd pour so much into it, and I think if it worked out, then that you'd feel, or you know, another Salamander novel or a different series perhaps, but certainly right now, just because everything just works as I wanted it to in that book, and went quite smoothly actually. I was very satisfied with how that storyline turned out. Grimblades would be my favourite, and probably that would probably surprise some people. But there you go.
Now, if you could steal, not steal, but borrow another of the Black Library's characters to show up repetitively in one of your book series.
Oh, that's interesting.
And you could play with that character. You kind of have free will. We won't kill him or nothing. I know, I believe it was Gav Thorpe threatened to kill one of your characters.
Oh, yeah, he did. Yeah, so, he won't get a chance to do that.
Yeah, good. Who would you like to play around with?
Let me think. Probably, well, you know what? I had a lot of fun writing a short story about the Volpone Blue Bloods for the Sabbat Worlds anthology. And when I wrote that story, when I suggested to... first of all, I was extremely honoured to be asked by Dan to write a story. And then my first thought was, what am I going to write? And I thought, the Blue Bloods, they're part of the fixtures and fittings. They've been in Gaunt from the start. They've been loads. And it wasn't until I started actually going back into my books and chatting to Dan, and I sort of realized, well, they've only been in like about two books.
Yeah, and they were like about a chapter and a half, really.
Yeah, and that was it. And they were in Necropolis quite a bit, and well, I'd love to do a book about the Vault Pwn. Actually, I don't know if Dan would ever let me do something like that. I'd like to do that. But I don't know, character wise, either maybe Talos from the Night Lords books.
Okay.
Just because Aaron and I did a linked short story in Fear the Alien.
Yeah.
Our two stories overlap each other. We didn't tell anybody. We just put it in the book. People would reading it and then be, oh my god, these stories are interlinked. Yeah. Like, yeah, that's right, they do. So I'd maybe like to do put some Night Lords, maybe a couple of his characters, and play with them for a bit. Or failing that, I think my favourite 40k character is probably Eisenhorn.
Yeah,
I really like Eisenhorn. Maybe some of his operatives, or some of Ravenna's operatives, perhaps, as a recurring characters in a Salamander series. That would be interesting if I could have an inquisitorial slant to the storyline, and having, you know, Eisenhorn. I wouldn't really work in terms of the chronology, but maybe Ravenna or one of his lackeys or something. That would be quite nice.
Bastard child.
Yeah, that would be good. Yeah, something like that. Some kind of link to those stories would be cool, I think. Definitely.
That's good. Well, we're getting high. We're pretty close. I'm doing, trying to keep my interviews around 20 minutes apiece.
Okay.
I'd like to thank you for taking the time.
Pleasure.
Doing this thing. And, you know, what can, you know, the listeners look forward for Nick Kime in the near future that they should be really keeping an eye out for?
Oh, geez. Well, fans of my fantasy stuff will be pleased to know that I am writing the first book in a series about the War of Vengeance, which is the War of the Elves and the Dwarves for Time of Legends.
Yeah.
That's called The Great Betrayal. And I'm
whose side are you taking?
The dwarves. And I'm writing that alongside a good friend of mine and fellow author Chris Raitt, who wrote the fantastic Sword of Justice and Sword of Vengeance novels for Warhammer Heroes. He's also just finished Battle of the Fang, which is a tremendous, tremendous book, absolutely awesome. So I'm very happy to be working with him on that project. We'll be alternating volumes of that particular series. Presently, I'm writing a novella for the Primarchs, which is a collection of novellas, an anthology collection of novellas. I believe that Gav Thorpe is also writing one about the lion. Mine is going to be called Feet of Iron, F-E-A-T, and it's about Ferus Manus.
Okay.
Which will be an interesting one, because arguably the most important thing, or the most notable thing that Ferus Manus has ever done, is died. So that was kind of the challenge for me, and some of the story is based a little bit around that. And the story will be set at the same time as Promethean Sun. So anybody who's read Promethean Sun, anybody who's not read Promethean Sun actually, will get to see another part aspect of that story and what happened to the Iron Hands in that particular campaign. And after that, I can't really say, because it's kind of getting a bit further ahead, but I have plans to do some more Space Marine battle stuff, and depends on my editors really what they want me to do and what I can do. And I'd like to, you know, now I've done the first Salamanders trilogy, I'd like to go back and do some more with those characters. I've got loads of ideas, loads of things. I've got a whole load of stuff in the pipe. I mentioned the audio drama, the Chaos Space Marine audio drama.
What was that about again?
I can't tell you. It's called Perfection.
I'm not that slick. I can't pull that through.
I can't tell you. So yeah, that's where I'm at right now.
Okay, good.
Yeah, a lot of stuff, a lot of exciting stuff. Yeah.
Now, for the listeners, if they want to follow you through social media, I mean, do you have a website?
I do. Blog? Yeah, I do have a website and blog. If you log on to nickkime.com, all one word, you'll find my website and blog, and I blog fairly regularly. You can leave me messages on there, comment on the blog stream. There's some stuff about new releases as well. Or alternatively, just go to blacklibrary.com and you'll be kept up to date on my book signings, things that are happening with my novels. You'll be able to find my whole back catalogue on there, most of which is digital now, so you'll be able to get it on your, you know, your iPads or your Nook or whatever it is you use to, whatever medium it is you use to read digitally. That you can do that as well.
Your data's late.
Yeah, my data's late, exactly. Yeah. whatever you've got to hand. Those are the two main areas I would probably be better off gravitating towards.
Cool. I'll let you get back to your cohort so they don't think that I've kidnapped you or anything like that.
No worries. Well, thank you very much.
It wasn't high enough.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you.
Oh, thank you. Thank you for taking the time.
All right. Cheers, man.
Lo, there do I see my father. Lo, there do I see my mother and my sisters and my brothers. Lo, there do I see the line of
my people back to the beginning.
Lo, they do call to me. They bid me take my place among them.
In the halls of Valhalla.